They said, don't pay attention to her. She's mentally off. She just goes around repeating what she's heard other people say. But you were kind enough not to do that. Appreciate that very, very much. Let me tell you what's going to happen after this session. Lynn will rejoin me, and we'll talk about a fair proof in your marriage. We'll talk about how to strengthen your marriage. I'm telling you, folks, this one presentation, 7 o'clock, is going to be worth the whole trip. I'm serious. You might say, well, I don't know if I need it. I guarantee you need it. And just trust us in our 22 years experience. Monday night, please listen to me, part one, part two. We're going to do some work from a psychiatrist named Cloninger. As I told the afternoon session, you're going to learn some things about yourself, about your children, about your friends that you never knew before. I wish every session could be as light bulb moment as Monday night is. People go out Monday night usually and say, I wish I'd heard this 20 years ago to save me a lot of grief. And that's true. So that's tomorrow night. Very important. Tuesday night, unrealistic expectations. We deal with sexuality and finances, followed by a one-hour presentation on pornography in general. And you might say, well, that's not my problem. I guarantee it's a problem of somebody you know. I can guarantee that. And parents, this is what our children are facing. You need to have some good information. It is the hardest presentation for us to make. But it is the most insightful. It comes from 35 scientific journals. And the National Enquirer was not one of them. Okay, so it's going to be then Wednesday night, Loving Your Mate Through the Seasons of Life, part one, part two. On Wednesday night, we deal with depression. If depression is a problem that you have or somebody in your family, Wednesday night would be absolutely essential because we're going to walk with you through this thing and try to help you out as best we possibly can. So that's what you can look forward to over the next couple of days. I'm in Genesis chapter 2, latter part of verse 20. Now for Adam no suitable helper was found, so the Lord God caused man to fall into a deep sleep. While he was sleeping, took one of man's ribs, closed up the place with flesh. Then the Lord God made a woman from the rib he had taken out of the man, and he brought her to the man. The man said, wow. I just see if you're reading your Bibles. Now, don't you know that's what Adam said the first time he saw a woman? In fact, that's how she got her name. Whoa, wow, man. Whoa, man. They'll get better. This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She should be called woman, for she was taken out of the man. For this reason, a man will leave his father and his mother, be united to his wife, and they will become one flesh. Somebody said that Adam and Eve were the only ideal couple. Because, you see, Adam didn't have to listen to Eve talk about all the other men she could have married. Eve didn't have to listen to Adam talk about how much better his mother's cooking was than hers. So we're looking for the ideal marriage tonight. We'll probably never get there. Why? Because we have imperfect people. As long as you have imperfect people, you're going to have imperfect marriages. Does that follow? Is everybody okay with that? Because nobody's perfect. A preacher was preaching one time, and he thought it'd be safe to say, well, there's nobody that's perfect. If you think you're perfect, stand up. Would you believe somebody stood up? He stopped the sermon. He said, he looked at him. He said, sir, I said, if you're perfect, stand up. He said, I heard you. He said, you perfect? He said, no. He said, what are you doing standing up then? He said, I thought I'd represent my wife's first husband. Okay. Nobody's perfect, but we're going to seek then for the ideal marriage. All right, get your outlines out. I assume you have your outline of ideal marriage. You need to fill in the blanks. If for some while you got in here without an outline, raise your hand. I'll try to get you one if you want one. Nobody wants one. Everybody has one. You're lying. No, you're telling the truth. Okay, everybody's got an outline, a unified marriage. You say, now, wait a minute, Jones. The idea of a husband and wife on the same page, get real. Okay, I will admit to you that men and women do not see the same thing the same way. I mean, that's just the nature of it. Gentlemen, if a lady, your wife comes to you and said, I want to I need a new pair of shoes. I'm going to go shopping. Would you go shopping with me? Now, gentlemen, you have to understand that when she means by shopping and what you mean by shopping might not be one and the same. For example, you go with her into the first shoe store. She finds the right pair of shoes, the right color, the right size, right price, first store she goes into. Gentlemen, what should you do? Hello? Buy them, right? Ladies? No, you can't buy the first pair of shoes you look at. You haven't been shopping. So you have to go around all these other stores. Have you ever been someplace maybe on Sunday night, Applebee's or Chili's or wherever you go? People sitting around eating pie, drinking coffee. Have you ever been there and see a lady get up and say, I'm going to the ladies' restroom, any of you ladies want to go? Usually the other ladies, well, yes, I'll go, finally go. Finally, all the ladies get up and go together. But you don't understand, that's a social event. And they have to go together. Now, I've not been in the ladies' restroom, obviously, but my wife tells me when they get in there, they talk. Well, that's a cute pair of shoes. Where'd you get that necklace? I love that dress. I know that's what they're saying when they come out. And ladies, there's nothing wrong with that. But you'll never be at a restaurant on Sunday night and see a man get up and say, I'm going to men's room. Any of you guys want to go? Most men feel they can go without an escort. Now, ladies, you don't know anything about the men's restroom, but let me tell you something. When they get in there, they don't say anything to anybody. They don't see another man in there and say, man, dude, you smell good. What you got on there? Guys, am I telling it right? Gentlemen, if you are the king of your household, your scepter is the remote. They have made a study of men that when they die, it takes them 24 hours for their thumb to stop moving. Ladies, it's the most frustrating thing in the world to try to watch TV with him, right? Because the more channels, the bigger the dish. I mean, he's moving on through. What's going on there? I don't know, but we're moving on. Ladies, you don't think that way. I know you don't. You see, what you don't understand about that husband is he doesn't care if he knows what's going on. He just wants to know, am I making good time through the channels? That's the way he thinks. It may have been like that all the time. You remember the last vacation you took? And you were in the car and you thought you had maybe taken the wrong road. Ladies, you made the suggestion, well, honey, let's stop and ask for directions. He's not going to do it, ladies. See, he doesn't care if he's going the wrong way. He just wants to know, am I making good time in this direction? Ladies, I don't mean to discourage you, but men have been like that for hundreds of years. You remember Moses? That dude wandered in the wilderness for 40 years before he got out. So what I'm saying is, don't allow your differences then to divide you. Now, unify three areas. Number one would be spiritual unity. Spiritual unity. I didn't say religious unity. There's a difference between religious unity and spiritual unity. You say, Jerry, what's the difference? The difference is religious unity, you believe the same things. Spiritual unity, Jesus occupies a center point reference in that marriage. That's the difference. And you see, you've got to have that center point reference, because if you have the center point reference, then you have two people going toward that center point. What has to happen? They have to get closer together. When we do marriage counseling, sometimes I ask, what does Jesus Christ have to do with this marriage? And they sort of look at me and say, well, that's not our problem. Yes, it is your problem. See, there's a possibility a person can be religious and not spiritual. Now let that sink in. You could possibly be religious and not spiritual. There's a possibility you can not take the church for credit, but you can audit the course. Academic people, you understand what I'm saying. That's just not where you are. Is there a possibility that a person could obey Jesus Christ without surrendering his life. Now think about it. People have obeyed Christ in baptism, but the question I say is, have you really surrendered your life? Well, I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. That's a wonderful confession. But only Romans 10 and verse 9 says our confession is Jesus is Lord. The situation that I think we're facing to a large extent is people trying to be religious without being spiritual. And that's why Jesus Christ is such a basic, important component in every relationship and every life. Let me urge you as a husband and wife to do some things spiritually together. Lynn and I enjoy our work because we're able to do it together. Teach a class together, take food to somebody, visit somebody, or whatever it might be. I think, unfortunately, in the church many times, the husband goes this way and the wife goes this way doing their spiritual things, and they fail to do it together. It's a tremendous bonding, and I would suggest that to you. Intellectual unity. Does that mean you IQ test your spouse? If they don't live up to a certain level, you get rid of them? No. You need to be able to interact and talk. It's amazing to us the number of couples that don't know how to talk to one another. You say, that's us. We're going to teach you in this seminar how to talk with one another, how to be able to converse with one another. It's a very important bonding time and unifying time. Emotional unity. Now, I've already admitted that men and women do not see the same thing emotionally together, the same way, okay? All I'm saying is, try to meet in the middle and try to understand the other person. The best way to illustrate this would be Valentine's Day. Valentine's Day is the best time to show you the difference between men and women of how they handle Valentine's Day. What I usually do is I park myself at Walmart, sometimes for several hours, and I watch the Valentine's section. And I watch men and women pick out a Valentine's card. They do not do it the same way. A man picking out a Valentine's card at Walmart. Wife. Now, ladies, he does not know what it said. Now, he can sign his name. You can cry if you want to, but he didn't know what it said. Lady picking out a card at Walmart. The average woman picks out, I've counted them, 4 to 5 Valentine's cards, takes them down, puts them up, tries to find the right one for her husband. Then she takes it, writes a nice sweet note, and then, ladies, you hand it to him. Now, watch him when he gets it. He'll open it up and he'll say, that's nice. He hasn't read it yet. But he knows from past experience that he better give a positive comment about this card. Okay? Lady in Birmingham, Alabama, several years ago, told me that her mother had given her dad the same anniversary card for the last 10 years, and he hasn't caught on yet. Emotional unity. Secondly, in this area, would be God-centeredness. God-centeredness, marriage characterized by commitment. God's a committed God. I'll never leave you. I'll never forsake you. He puts the rainbow in the sky to show you I'll never destroy the earth by flood ever again. It's a commitment not just to the marriage, but it's a commitment to the individual. Gentlemen, sometimes we mess up in this area. We say, well, I'll supply what's necessary for that marriage, but we don't make a commitment to the individual. You're basically making a commitment saying, hey, look, you know, we're in this thing thick and thin. We're going to be with it all the way, ups and downs, ins and outs. When you said I do, you forever gave up the right to make a decision for yourself. Now, if you're single and you're not willing to give up that freedom, I say marriage is not for you. Plain and simple. What we have to deal with sometimes in our counseling are what we call married singles. They're married on paper, but they still have a single mindset. And folks, that won't get it. That won't get it at all. Also, when a God-centered marriage is characterized by unconditional love. The Bible says that God commends his love toward us while we're yet sinners. Christ died for us, Romans 5 and verse 8. As I keep saying, I would really urge you to try to have a grasp and an understanding of how God loves you so you'll have a benchmark to love this way. Lynn and I get it all the time. People say, well, I don't believe I'm good enough to be saved. My answer is, what else is new? You're not saved because you're good. You're saved because God's good. That's what we've got to, until we understand that. We've got to see it. We've got to see God's love is involved with it. You see, it's like the preacher gets his picture made for the church directory. He looks at the picture, calls the photographer in, and says, this picture doesn't do me justice. The photographer says, you don't need justice, you need mercy. Well, that's where we are then as an individual. We don't need justice, we need mercy. And see, once we have an understanding of God's love, then we're going to be able then to transfer that then to other people. We're saying, I've made a decision to bless your life. I want what's best for you. Now, again, it's not the unconditional acceptance of ungodly behavior. We will have to hit that several times in this seminar because people get this all messed up. God stands against any behavior that's sexually immoral, illegal, unethical, or hurtful. If you put up with that kind of behavior, you are in what we call a codependent situation. Codependency is on one end, agape love's on the other end. Unfortunately, we find a lot of couples in between in the area of reciprocity. I'll do this, but you do this. I'll do this, but I expect you to do that. And according to my calculations, I'm ahead 6-2, and I'm not going to do another thing. Do you catch up? You see what I mean? We've got to have a healthy view and a healthy understanding, basically, of God's love for us. Forgiveness. There is no relationship, not just marriage, just talking about friendship, we're talking about the church, that can function long term without forgiveness. If you're with us this afternoon, we define forgiveness for you. Forgiveness is the releasing of my right to be hurt. Not saying who was wrong or who was right, but I'm not going to allow retaliation, revenge to be the agenda of my life. For any relationship, I'm talking about family, church, marriage, any relationship, if it's going to work long term, you have to learn 9 words. The 9 words are, I was wrong, I'm sorry, please forgive me. All right, let's learn those words tonight out loud. Ready? Here we go. I was wrong, I'm sorry, please forgive me. Now, just to say it like that, we've got to deal with some attitudes and some actions have to take place. You see, you can glibly say, well, I'm sorry. That's fine, that's a good start. But that's not the end of it. I knew that my relationship with Lynn was not going to work long term without forgiveness. I learned that before we ever said, I do. Now, let me put this in context. Lynn and I met the last week of January 1995 at the Oklahoma Christian University Lectureship. Our first date was the first week of February 1995, and we married on May 26, 1995. Now, if you're good with the calendar, you have figured out we dated most of February, March, April, and most of May. I know what some of you are thinking. Didn't date very long, did you? I will admit, by some people's standards, we didn't date very long. I will admit that. But at age 56, I didn't think it was wise to date long term. In fact, as I told you, now at age 79, when I go to the store, I don't even buy green bananas anymore. If they're not ripe, I'm not buying them. We had an interesting courtship. I remember the day she looked at me and she said, I don't care if you are Jerry Jones, I'm going to check you out. I said, how do you plan to do that? She said, I'm going to check your people trail. I said, my what? People trail. I said, what's a people trail? People have known you in the past. Can they verify you are who you're claiming to be? She said, I was fooled once, but I'm not going to be fooled again. I said, yes, I can do that. I said, how far back do you want to go? She said, high school. I said, okay. Called a friend of mine named Dick Metz. I said, Dick, I guess you heard that Claudette died. He said, yes, I heard that. I said, I'm dating a lady in Oklahoma, and she wants to check my people trail. Dick said, you're what? I said, people trail. He said, what's a people trail? I said, you. He played center on a basketball team where I played guard. We did a lot of things together. So I said, she wants to talk to you. We made the arrangement. She came to St. Louis, sat down to breakfast with Dick Metz. Now, let me tell you about my buddy Dick Metz. He's been married and divorced 5 times, and he's a recovering alcoholic, and he's now going to become my credit reference. I hope you understand there's a little problem here. Well, she checked him out, and he verified I was who I claimed to be. So I thought, well, this is turnabout's fair play. So I said, I'm going to check your people trail. She said, fine. She said, what do you want to do? I said, I want to talk to the counselor, the psychologist that worked you through your divorce. She said, fair enough. She called the counselor. His name is Mike. Said, this man I'm dating wants to know something about my character and background. Forget about confidentiality. Tell him anything he wants to know. I set the appointment up, went in his office, shook his hand, sat down. He said, Mr. Jones, what can I help you with? I said, I want to ask one question about this woman. He said, what is it? I said, she's sick or not? Ladies, I'm sorry. I didn't have time to fool around with a sick, messed up woman. I'm sorry. She said, no, she's fine. She's dealt with her program. She's fine. I said, okay. Well, after both of us passed tests, then we decided to talk to 6 other couples that were in second marriages for whatever reason. Because, you see, there's a possibility we are so enamored with one another, we cannot see the obvious problems. Let me tell you something. Before you get married, I don't care who you are, young or old, you get input and advice from some other people, okay? It's a wise thing to do. Somebody asked me, well, what happens if they talk you out of it? I say, praise God. I want to know now and not later on. It was in this context, Dr. Bill Cox, who was vice president of Harding University for a number of years, officiated at my first wife's funeral, called me and told me, he said, I understand that you're dating seriously. I said, I am. He said, well, Pat and I, that was his wife, would like to talk to the two of you. I said, fine. So we drove from Clinton, Oklahoma, down to Rowlett, Texas, suburb of Dallas. Spent 2 or 3 days with them. They concluded that it looked like I was going to marry over my head for the second time. And Pat looked at me and she said, all I can think of is when Ananias came to Saul, he said, why do you tarry? I looked at Lynn and Lynn looked at me and I said, well, I'm ready if you are. She said, I'm ready if you are. It's Thursday. You're in Rowlett, Texas. You want to get married as fast as you could. What would you do? I called Arkansas. Bentonville, Arkansas. I said, what's it take to get married in Bentonville, Arkansas? They said, driver's license. Blood test? No. 3-day wait? No. Driver's license. I said, we're headed your way. Friday morning, we get up, get in my van, and we start north. If you're familiar with that area, you have to go through Atoka, Oklahoma. On the left-hand side, Atoka, Oklahoma is Love's truck stop. That's where we stop. That's where people in love stop. I'm putting gas in the van. Lynn's frantically going through her purse, and she decides she has left her wallet back in Rowlett. I don't get it. Because I respond and say, don't worry, I have plenty of money. Ladies, money is not the issue. Besides money, what else do you keep in your wallet? Thank you, driver's license. When I finally figured that out, I thought, whoa, we got a problem. First of all, I got to find out where the wallet is. So I called back to the house. I said, Bill Ray, check the room that she was staying in. Did she leave her wallet? He called back and said, yes, it's right here. In the meantime, I had called Bentonville, Arkansas, to an elderly preacher up there, asked him to do my wedding ceremony at 7 o'clock in Ron Conley's house, and actually, if you know the area, Garfield, Arkansas, which is outside of Bentonville. F.I. Stanley was the man's name. I said, we don't have time to go back to get the wallet. So I called Bentonville. I said, Bentonville, I'm planning to get married. I have my driver's license. I understand I have it. My wife has a driver's license, but unfortunately, she left it back in Dallas. I said, would you accept the facts of a driver's license? They said, sure. I thought, okay. Now, what I told you all this to show you in couch it in context, this forgiveness now is becoming a problem in our marriage. Because, you see, I cannot imagine a person as smart as she is wanting to marry me would leave the very thing back in Dallas she had to have. I thought it was unforgivable. I thought it was ridiculous. But I thought I better not tell her what I was thinking on the eve of my honeymoon. We get to Bentonville, Arkansas, about 4 o'clock, county courthouse. Go up there. So we want to get a marriage license. Here's my driver's license. Did you get a fax today? They said, yes, we did. I said, it's a fax of this lady's driver's license. We want a marriage license. They said, you can't get it. I said, wait a minute. I called somebody in this office. They said I could. She said, sorry, it was me. I answered the phone and told you that it would be fine. After I hung up, I realized then you can fax the information that comes through on the driver's license, but the picture is totally black. You cannot identify this woman with this fax. My mind spun. I said, are you telling me I cannot get a marriage license? She said, you can't get one to this woman. Do you understand what's going on now? If we don't get that marriage license, it's 4 o'clock. We can't get married at 7 o'clock that night. We can't get married on Saturday because the courthouse is closed. It's closed on Sunday. Monday is Memorial Day. I'm going to have to wait to Tuesday to get married, and I'm focused. This forgiveness is now major stress. I look at Lynn, and she grins. I don't see anything funny about this situation. Through the grin, she said, I've got an idea. I said, okay, what is it? In my mind, I say, woman, this is strike three. That, I didn't say that, but I was thinking. She said, reaches in her purse and pulls out her Sam's Club card. Your picture is on Sam's Club card. She said, maybe this would work. I said, well, we got to lose to try it. I took the card, told the lady across the counter, I said, she doesn't have her driver's license, but there's her Sam's Club card. She announced that in this town, that is better than your driver's license. Forgiveness. Stress test. Now, she's had to forgive more after the I do's, because you cannot imagine some of the things I've done in this marriage. Christmas 1995 was our first Christmas together. We spent it with her family. Her dad is Dr. James Baird, the past president of Oklahoma Christian University. Her brother is Jim Baird, doctor's degree from Oxford, teaches in the Bible department. Very fine, educated, outstanding Christian people, and I'm the new kid on the block. Now, I wanted to get something her first Christmas that there's no way that she'd forget it and would make a tremendous impression on this family. I came up with two what I thought marvelous ideas. I wrapped them up. Now what they do, they open their Christmas presents on Christmas Eve. And what it is, you get in this big room and all the presents with your name on it end up in front of you and you open them up one at a time, so everybody else can ooh and ah about what you got. It's the dumbest way I've ever seen to do it. It takes forever to get it done. But would you believe she gets the first present to open. Well, do you have something, Jerry? She said, yes, right here. Well, why don't you open it? She opens her first present. She will verify this. This is the flat-out truth. The first present she ever opened for me on Christmas Eve, 1995, was her own personalized hunting knife with her name engraved on it. Now, I know some of you women are jealous. You just have to get over it. I could tell I'd made a hit with the family because nobody said anything. Finally, somebody got enough nerve to say, nice. See, I figured any woman that would kill her first deal needed her own knife to gut it with. And on top of that, her name was engraved on it. Now, how many women are going to have that? She likes that knife, still has it. about 2 or 3 years ago now, I went up to the master bathroom, and she was putting new putty around the shower stall. Gentlemen, guess what she was using for a putty knife? She was using that $40 buck knife with her name engraved on it as a putty knife. Well, to be gentle, like I wanted to be, I said, honey, that's not really a good idea. That's not a good putty knife. Because it's got a point on it. She said, I know that, and that's why I broke the point off. Guys, doesn't that just get to you? Well, it's my knife. I can do it. It is your knife, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. She still has that knife. Keeps it in the drawer next to the bed for some reason. I made such a hit with the family. Unprecedented. You have another gift from Jerry? Yes, right here. We'll open that one. Now, this has never happened before or since. And I'm sitting there thinking, whoo, they like the first one. They're going to love the second one. Second gift she opened was her own personalized camouflaged kimono. Gentlemen, in case you don't know, that's a bathrobe. She put that on the bedroom, looked like a tree on the move. Okay. Forgiveness. Forgiveness. Relationships will not work without forgiveness. Question is, why is forgiving so difficult? Number one, we're because of fear. Well, if I forgive, it's just going to happen again, so why do it the first time? Secondly, I'm not going to be able to use that offense against the offender ever again. See, I can't say, well, you know, we're getting a big argument that, well, you remember when you did so-and-so? Well, now, wait a minute. If you're forgiven, you can't do that. That's not fair. What we find are people who garbage bag stuff, and when they get in some kind of an argument, they just throw garbage all over the place. Thirdly, if we forgive the hurt, we can't play victim. It's amazing to us the number of people who want to live in what we call victim mentality. Victim mentality is defining myself today by what happened to me yesterday. You can no longer play the victim. But forgiveness is difficult also for even for another reason. And this one really hits home. Is our own feeling of righteousness. Well, I've never done that. Well, maybe you haven't, but you've probably done something worse than that if we knew the truth. If we really knew the truth. I'm glad you don't know all the things I did. And you're glad I don't know all the things you did, right? Here again, we feel sometimes that we're so righteous that we condemn other people. We realize that we are sinners too at the same time. Finally, the ideal marriage is emotional intimacy, and let me define the emotional intimacy for you. I'm not talking about physical intimacy. We'll talk about that in our conference. Freedom from anxiety in the presence of vulnerability. I'm not over anxious and I'm not upset that Lynn knows my shortcomings, my imperfections. And I don't think that just because I make a mistake that my position as her husband is going to be vetoed. Same is true vice versa. Unfortunately, we have a lot of relationships, especially marriages, that do not have emotional intimacy. Why is this so important? If in a marriage you do not have emotional intimacy, there's a good possibility your relationship has become an emotional divorce, and it's simply an arrangement rather than a relationship. I worked with the men a little bit this in Bible class this morning, but I'll be honest with you. I don't have time to play games. If you're not willing to be transparent and honest, these next 4 days are going to be worthless. I'm serious. If you just want to put on your game face or your church face and pretend that I'm okay, you're okay, what we're going to be doing here is not going to be very helpful. If your spouse knew exactly how you feel about them in the marriage, what would be their reaction? Now, some would be good reactions. We got some great marriages here, but that's not true of every couple that I'm talking to at this hour. You're going to sleep in the same bed tonight. You're going to ride in the same car, but you're not on the same page. You thought about divorce? You've been entertaining the idea of what it would be like to be married to somebody else now, especially at age 30, 40, or 50. I know what I need more than ever. We're dealing with more people in the past 3 or 4 years that have been married 25 and 30 years that are now divorcing at an alarming rate. And the point is, they have been emotionally divorced for years. But because of the pressure of family and church and children and so on, they tried to stay together. And they existed. Well, they walk through doors like this and they put on their game, their church face and act like everything is all right. But when you leave this building, you get in your car, you go home and close that front door, you know there's something wrong in this house. This is what's happened. What's happened to a large extent, they built their whole family around either his career or your children. And finally, when the career problems are solved and the children are gone, you've turned around. You look at this person that you pledged life and love to, and you wonder who in the world they are. And that's why this week is important. If you will be transparent and you'll be honest, with God's help, we can help you this week. I mean that with all my heart. We can help you reconnect, maybe take your marriage higher than it's ever gone before. And as I told the men today, it's not because we're so great or we're so wonderful. It's because God is great and God is wonderful. You understand? And that's why this week, folks, is so important. And we have a number of visitors with us, and I commend everybody who has taken time out of their busy schedule, fought the elements or whatever it might be, to be here. Satan's already convinced a percentage of this church that they don't need this. And I'm sorry, I regret that people pay hundreds of dollars to go to things like this, and your church provides it for you free. And I appreciate a leadership that says, hey, we need to do more preventive work. We can't wait till people get in trouble. Nothing runs without maintenance, folks. Your car, your body, your house, your marriage. If you married at 20, who you are at 40 is different. Who you are at 60 is different. And those are the challenges that we're facing. And the difference we're making. And that's why this week is so important. Lynn's the professional counselor of our ministry. And I asked her one time, I said, Lynn, how does a couple that married and they were so close together and 20 years down the road, they're wanting to get a divorce? What happened? She said, there's a lot of explanations, but she said, here's the best that I can give you. She said, what happens is this person goes into a marital relationship with what we call the cup half filled. Maybe they were not encouraged. Maybe they were not nurtured. Maybe they were not loved. Maybe they were abandoned. Maybe they were in all kinds of stuff. And they feel, if I could find my better half, if I could find that one person that would meet all my needs, then I would be a whole person. You find another individual over here really has the same problem. Maybe they were abused. Maybe they were not nurtured. They weren't encouraged. And they feel that they're a half person. And they're going around in life, if I can find this other person, I'll tell them what my needs are and they can fill those needs. These two half people get married thinking the other one is going to meet all the needs that they ever thought about having. And it's not long into that marriage where one of them is not doing it or one of them cannot do it. And said, if you don't meet my needs, I'm not going to meet your needs. And by that time then, they're at loggerheads with someone and they're going then to a lawyer to try to get a divorce because the other person is not doing what they thought they ought to do. And see, the problem is they were two half people thinking they would be a whole person, thinking that the other person could meet their needs. And you see, the basic needs of being loved, the idea of never being abandoned, compassion and nurture doesn't come from another person, but the basic needs that we all have, ladies and gentlemen, comes not from another person, but a relationship with God Almighty. You see, you're looking the wrong place. You're going the wrong direction. Because you're having unrealistic expectations. And that's what happens. You say, Jerry, can I invest in my marriage tonight? Absolutely. Here are some things that just need to be in every marriage on a daily basis. Acceptance, affection, appreciation, approval. You make deposits into your bank account so when you write a check, it doesn't bounce. We have to do the same thing with relationships, marriage or otherwise. We have to invest in it. I told the men today, there are only two things the Bible tells me to do daily. One of them is in Hebrews chapter 3 and verse 14, is we're to encourage one another daily. I told the men today about the time I was preaching up in Oklahoma back about a year ago. I just told everybody to take out their cell phone. I put six names and telephone numbers on the screen of people in that church that needed encouragement. They were either sick or they were shut in or whatever it is. I said, take your cell phone out. And you might know one of them or maybe other. Write a text, a message to them right now, and I stopped the sermon. For at least 60 seconds. And then when I got through, I said, how hard was that? You see how we can encourage one another and it doesn't take that much effort? Can we not do that with us? Can we not do that with our children? Can we not do that with our spouses? And so these are the investments that basically we are to make. Ephesians 5 and verse 33. However, each one of you must love his wife as he loves himself, and the wife must respect her husband. Goes on the refrigerator tomorrow. What difference would it make in your relationship? What we're about this week is maintenance, upbuilding, and having a quality that will really make the difference. We're going to give you a little break. Lynn will rejoin me in 6 minutes. I hope you can stay for it.